Welcome to the podcast. My name is Father Bill W., and I'm an Episcopal priest. I live here in Austin, Texas, and have had the gift of recovery since December the 27th of 1972. The purpose of these podcasts is to go deeper into the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, the spirituality that underlies it, and touch on the psychology as well. What is really meant by spiritual experience, transformation, psychic change? That's the thing that has always fascinated me and drawn me into the program. So we are doing a series right now. We're finishing it up. This is the last episode. It is on a book, Spiritual Evolution, A Scientific Defense of Faith by George Valiant. And Valiant was a research psychiatrist at Harvard University for many, many years, did studies, long-term studies, longitudinal studies, 40, 50, 60 years. He was part of that, tracing how people changed over the course of their lifetimes. Also led an alcoholism treatment program up there in Massachusetts, and was on the board of trustees for Alcoholics Anonymous. So he's really well versed in this subject and able to look at spirituality from a scientific point of view. And that's what I like about his book. I found it fascinating. I hope I had a lot of comments from people that they have enjoyed this series. So a little deep in some parts, but that's okay. Don't be afraid to get wet. We're talking about spiritual evolution, and that's the focus of his book. And by that, he means an evolution going on towards positive emotions, a greater experience of love, hope, faith, joy, forgiveness, compassion, along with awe and mystical illumination. And we've done an episode on each one of those topics to go a little deeper into understanding them. And so these are the positive emotions that he explores. And now he comes to the final chapter in his book on that subject in the past, but Valiant brings some unique perspectives. So I think it's worth looking at in some detail. And he lists five ways that he sees religion and spirituality as different. I mean, I hear all the time, and I'm sure you do as well, I'm spiritual but not religious. So there's some pull going on between these two that's worth teasing out. What is it that goes to the heart of religion? What is it that goes to the heart of spirituality? They don't have to be opposed to one another, but they can be and are, I think, often in the minds of some folks out there, including George, maybe a bit more than I'd like to see, but that's okay. He says, religions tend to focus on particular doctrines, values, and traditions, while spirituality relates, quote, to an individual's sense of connection with something transcendent, be it a defined deity, truth, beauty, or anything else considered to be greater than self and manifested, made present by the emotions of awe, gratitude, love, compassion, and forgiveness. Now, religions can lead to that. They should lead to that. But if you get bogged down in the first part, the doctrines, the values, and the traditions too heavily, you're going to miss the spirituality that is the ultimate goal. I understand that. I mean, I had my own problems with religion. getting into the history was helpful for me in overcoming that. But I had a friend in the program who was raised in an orphanage. He taught me a lot. He was a really good guy. In the name of God, all sorts of crap happened to this poor man in that orphanage. And when he came into AA, you know, he saw the G word and it scared the hell out of him. You know, I can't do this, he said. And like some others that I've heard, what he did was in place of the word God, every time he saw it in the big book, he put a little extra O in it and made it good, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of good as we understood good. So through prayer and meditation, improve our conscious contact with good. Well, he was probably closer to what the program is really all about and what religion ought to be all about as well, if it doesn't get stuck in some of those things. What does he list them as? Doctrines, values, traditions that need to evolve with time. So his second point, religion arises from one's culture. Spirituality arises from biology. Now, that's the point that I think he really makes a good contribution to understanding spirituality here, that spirituality resides in biology. It's in our guts. It's in our bones. It's within us. It's not so much connecting to something outside of us, but to the very deepest parts of ourselves. He says, like culture and language, religious faith traditions bind us to our own community and can isolate us from the communities of others. It can become tribal, all right? But he says, like breathing, our spirituality is common to all. On the one hand, religion asks us to learn from the experience of our tribe. Spirituality urges us to savor our own experience. On the other hand, religion helps us to mistrust the experience of other tribes. Spirituality helps us to regard the experience of the foreigner as valuable too. That's where I think George may lose it a little bit, just like I think people in AA, and just like myself. I mean, I got out of religion for my first 20 years in the program, and it wasn't until I started studying the history of AA that I was able to bridge my way back. And the thing that did it for me was learning that AA came from the Oxford group, and that the Oxford group originated with the name of First Century Christian Fellowship. And I started studying all I could about what was this first century Christian world like. And that just opened doors for me because it got beyond. I could see where tradition and theology was being formed, you know. But it was pretty loose in the beginnings and very attractive, you know. So I got to kind of read stuff that was as it originated. And when you go back to the origins of it, for me anyway, I got a whole different taste of what that was about. Deeply, deeply spiritual. The mystics open the door to that. They are the ones who kind of live on the edge. They're experiential in their approach to it. And tradition and things like that have a real value in helping kind of guide us. I mean, we have had several thousand years of people struggling and writing on this stuff, and some of them actually were pretty helpful. Okay, the third point, the third difference between religion and spirituality, he says, is that religion is more cognitive and spirituality is more emotional. That's an important point, that the left brain tries to understand God. Good luck is my comment on that. The right brain opens me up to an experience of God. All right? And it's emotional. It's my whole self having an encounter with that, whereas the other is just thinking about it. And if you think about it, I don't think you're going to get there. And that's why Wilson had his spiritual experience. And he was convinced that if he could help people undergo a physical experience of God, an encounter, they would have it too. And that was the point of the steps. That was his point of later on experimenting with LSD, niacin experiments. Is there some bodily connection that people can have? Because that's, you know, I think for many of us, that's what we were looking for in the bottle or in the drugs. You know, it was an encounter with something greater than ourselves, and it was great. We liked it until it turned against us. And if we could handle it like some other people do, you know, big book says we're not against it. You know, it just didn't work for us. And so we had to find another way. And that other way is the way of spirituality. So the fourth difference, he says, is that cults, and he kind of subtly introduces the word cults in this chapter. It's not as clear as it could be, but he begins linking cults and religion. He says cults and religions tend to be authoritarian and imposed from without, while spirituality was more likely to be democratic and arise from within. Spirituality encourages you to learn from your experience. God, if one exists, he argues, lives within, which is exactly what the big book says, huh? The great reality is within. We're not going to find God out there. We're going to find him within ourselves and within our relationships with other people. You know, am I becoming more loving, more honest, more engaged, more compassionate? Are those the qualities that are happening in my life? That's what he says is the heart and soul of spirituality and of the spiritual change that we are seeking. The fifth point, he says, religions and cults tend to be intolerant, while spirituality builds on common traits, such as the positive emotions. Bill Wilson said something, I haven't been able to find the quote, but he said one of the greatest dangers he feared was that AA would become like a religion. He wanted it to be and intended for it to be a spiritual kindergarten, a place to start off, a place from which to grow, not a place wherein to stay stuck. And that, I think, in my experience, is what happens to a whole lot of people in their 12-step journey, is that they turn what should be a fellowship of spiritual seekers into a quasi-religious cult where they try to have their program provide things that it's not capable of providing. And so for me, it's been trying to find that balance between religion and spirituality, that they don't have to be opposed to one another, that I can go to religion for certain things, and like tradition and history and music and worship services, and I can go to AA for something very different from that. And how do you walk that fine line between the two? And it's good to be at meetings. It's good to be at church. You know, if you're being fed there, and if you're carrying a good message there, if you're just going through the actions and keeping it rather mechanical, you can lose some of the juice, some of the energy that each one should be giving to us. In his next section, Valiant turns to AA, and he asks an important question. He asks, is AA a cult? Is it in danger of turning itself into a religion? And as a clinician and as a researcher, he had the opportunity to study AA for 35 years. And I'll quote a few of his conclusions because I think they're helpful. He says, for men in my study, and he studied men. He did a long-term study, interviewed men, two groups. One was men who had been to Harvard, pretty well educated and such, 230 or 50 or 70, a good number, and interviewed them at the end of 10 years, 20, 30, 50. What became of them? How did they evolve? And they were interested spiritually, religiously. How did they evolve? He said, for men in my study who developed alcoholism, AA worked far better than psychiatric care. He says, one reason for the better outcomes, and this goes to the heart of George's book, one reason for the better outcomes is that AA works at the level of the reptilian brain. And that's where it's kind of a little difficult to understand, but you know, the first two or three chapters, I've had some comments from people said, you know, they got through them and they got a lot out of that. But that the reptilian brain is the oldest brain. It's ingrained. It's our lizard brain, some people call it. And what he's saying is recovery works at that level, not at the cognitive, rational brain part, which was later developed. That alcoholism, the disease, the illness, is a distortion that happens at the level of the lizard brain. I feel like I'm gonna die if I don't get another drink. I feel like I'm gonna die if I don't get a donut in my mouth within the next 30 seconds. That's where you experience addiction, you know? And what George says, and what his studies show, is that AA works at that level of the reptilian brain. How does it do it? He says, just like alcoholism and drug addiction affect the lizard brain, the solution to recovery isn't going to be found in the logical, rational, neocortical level that's later developed, but in the depths of the lizard brain. It says modern medicine can detoxify, it can save lives, it can delay relapse. But all too often, alcoholics treated by modern medical science eventually do relapse. In contrast, he writes, Alcoholics Anonymous heals. Indeed, he says about 40% of all the stably abstinent alcoholics I've known in my personal, in my clinical, and in my research life have achieved their stable 10 years or more of abstinence in AA. And how does it achieve that? He says it does it through relapse prevention. So what he's convinced of is that AA, NACA, all of the 12-step programs have hit upon a relapse prevention program that if we participate in them, and I would argue participate in them in a healthy manner, okay, not becoming overly dependent to prevent relapse. So how does it do that? He lists 4 points. I think they're important to really understand these. He says, number one, AA achieves relapse prevention by providing a loving community. It provides a loving community. We join a fellowship of other sufferers who have recovered. You know, I was told when I came into 12-step, the most important word in the 12 steps is the first word, we. And you come in isolated, alone, disconnected. It's you and your bottle. It's you and your drug. It's you and your donut, or you and your sex. And you've been reliant on that and it ain't working anymore. And now you come into a fellowship, a loving community. And loving is important, and community is important. You're not going to a classroom. You're going into a community of fellow sufferers. You know, this is not a self-help program. This is a we help program. And I've got to be involved in that, particularly in the beginning. So he breaks this loving community down into four component parts. And here he kind of puts on his scientist's hat. He says that usually two or more of these component parts are necessary for recovery to happen. What are they? First, external supervision. So within this loving community, we're going to experience external supervision. There's a nice little quote here. He says, alligators do not come when they are called. Some kind of leash to control the reptile brain is necessary. See, the most natural thing for an addict to do is just to drink, to drug. You know, just like the most natural thing for an alligator to do is to bite your leg off. That's what we do. All right? And we're going to need a leash. We're going to need some external control, some external supervision, particularly as we begin the spiritual journey. Okay? Second important thing. He says it's important to find a competing behavior for the addiction. You cannot give up a habit without having something else enjoyable to do. Program says we insist on having fun. We are not a glum lot. We gotta offer people the excitement that recovery offers, not the drudgery. He says, AA understands what all behaviorists know and what many doctors, priests, and parents forget. Bad habits yield to substitutes, not to prohibition. You know, prohibition did not work. We take the alcohol away, we take the drugs away, you know, well, that's the solution. No, that's not the solution. The solution is to find something that works better than. And that's what they told me when I was leaving treatment. They said, Bill, if you don't find something that feels better than alcohol or drugs, you're going to be back here. Go find it. Go find it. And you find it in a fellowship of fellow sufferers. You know? And I was always attracted to the people who are further along the path than I was. And it just makes sense. You know, how did you stay sober for 6 months? What did you do? You know, and they would tell me, and they would stay with me, and they would love me, all right? Where the others, you know, in the normal world said, why the hell does he keep doing it? This group of people said, we understand that you keep doing it. We kept doing it. We've found a way out. Come with us. All right? Probably distrustful at first. We're going to get into that. So bad habits yield to substitutes, not to prohibition. Punishment and negative emotion alone do not change deeply ingrained habits. You can spank an alligator, but it isn't going to do a hell of a lot of good. Okay. Thus, AA and most religions provide a gratifying schedule of social and service activities in the presence of supportive and now healed former sinners or addicts, especially at times of high risk. Criticism is replaced by loving suggestions and unconditional positive regard. You know, when the big book was written originally, it said, you better do this. You got to do this. We had to do this. And some psychologist said, hey, knock that off. That ain't going to be appealing. We suggest, we found it helpful. So they went back and they rewrote it. Now, in their minds, they said, well, you better do this stuff, you know. But they also knew that if you try to cram it down somebody's throat, it's not going to work. It has to be a program of attraction. It has to be something that they want. And what Valiant is saying, it has to be better than what they had. Now, that may take some time to get there. But if it's not moving in that direction, sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly, but moving in that direction, it's not going to sustain. You got to find a better way of life. And AA offers that to you. They're going through the outer semblance of being a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim or, you know, but they haven't changed at depths. Certainly not at the depths that are going to really bring full recovery. And that's the thing that I saw some people who had done exactly that. And they're out there, but they're not in the majority. And you got to look hard for them. I mean, same thing in church. Most people in church are, you know, it's not a program of attraction. It's one of the reasons the program has stopped growing somewhat, you know, kind of hit its heyday numbers wise in the 90s. And people are now looking and saying, we got to get back to the original, because we're losing the juice, we're losing the excitement. And for me, that's what I'm trying to do by introducing people to two-way prayer as a way to emotionally have an encounter with the divine. That's where the juice starts coming in. So he says, AA and most religions provide a gratifying schedule of social and service activities in the presence of supportive and now healed former sinners, addicts, especially at times of high risk. Criticism is replaced by loving suggestions and unconditional positive regard. They told me, we're not loving you in spite of your being an addict. We love you because you are an addict. And so are we. And now come into this fellowship. It says AA meetings are filled with celebrations of anniversaries of sobriety, unlimited coffee and hugs, and great humor. George notes that some complain that, not unlike a cult, AA is addicting. Well, then he says, but so are puppies, you know. It says, like heroin and puppies, positive emotions have a sneaky way of making us come back for more. The brain chemistry of both addiction and attachment is the same. There's a very important sentence. The brain chemistry that goes on at the depths of addiction, the lizard brain that gets hijacked, is the same brain that is going to respond to recovery. The touch, the feel, the emotion, the mammalian that he talks about repeatedly, this is where it's going to happen. It isn't going to be at the cognitive analytical. Why do I drink? You know, boom, 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 boom. It may be helpful. I don't know. Recognize that and adjust my life accordingly. Well, the big book would say, good for you, but you're probably not a real addict. A real addict has been, his or her brain has been hijacked by chemicals. And so I'm doing what I don't want to do at the deepest level of self. And yet addiction sucks me in, pulls me in. And I got to find something that is better and more powerful than that. You know, that's what the steps are intended to lead us to. So I asked the question, is there such a thing as a positive addiction? Yeah, I think there can be, you know. Is going to meetings a positive thing? Absolutely. Is going to the gym positive? And is getting the endorphins going in your brain through running? And is there a calming effect to yoga and to meditation? Absolutely. These things do work on our body. Okay. Can they become an addiction? Yeah, you got to watch out for that. If I'm doing it in excess, and we do tend to be people of excess, you know, I may want to moderate it with some other things. And again, I'm going to go back. I had some really good teachers, you know, and what they told me was, Bill, in the beginning, you're going to go to meetings. I want you to go every day. Okay. I want you to go every day. Because in time, you're then going to start finding other things in your life that are going to come in and fill the void of alcoholism. You're going to find people. You're going to find activities that are satisfying and fulfilling, and you're going to moderate your meeting attendance. You know, so establish it hard and heavy in the beginning, and then begin to moderate and stay connected. That was the advice I got, you know, stay connected. That's 51 years. I'm still connected to people in my 12-step fellowship. I'm still nurtured by them, helped by them, in community with them, kind of doing this thing together. Am I desperately clinging to them like I did in the beginning? Not so much. Are they desperately clinging to me? Well, if they're in the early stages, you get a lot of that, you know, and that's okay. We understand where they are, but we should be encouraging them to put their dependency more and more on the one thing that will not let them down. See, people will let you down. The program can let you down. The church can let you down. God will not let you down. You know, I mean, it is the ultimate good. That's our definition of God. You know, the ultimate goodness, you know, doesn't mean I'm going to be separated from pain. Doesn't mean terrible things are going to not happen to me. They can happen to me. They do happen to me. Okay. But it means that even in that suffering, there's a presence that's there that will never let go. That's the place you got to get to. That's the place. He says, the third point, new love relationships are important to recovery, not dependent love relationships, but genuine. Go read that chapter on love again. He writes, it seems important for ex-addicts to bond with people whom they have not hurt in the past, and to whom they are not deeply emotionally in debt, as in the evolution of the mammalian limbic system in drug addiction. Love can tame the reptilian brain. An AA member's home group becomes a deeply trusted, non-judgmental family. Find people that you can trust in the program. And there are some predators out there, you know, don't be naive, you know, find people who have what you want and learn from them. And always be learning from them. And one person may have some quality that you really lack and you see it in him or her. Learn from them. How'd you get that? What'd you do to achieve that in your life? I don't know that anybody's got all of the qualities, you know, but look for the ones that you're lacking and then try to build those up. That's where your work is going to be. And if you approach 12-step recovery that way, it never gets old and boring. You know, it's your base platform from which you grow. if it is the be all and end all, you've missed something. And that's what he's saying on the religion deal. If your religion becomes dogmatic and entrapping of you, you know, and so you're critical of other religions, you know, mine is the only true way and everybody else go to hell, you've missed the message. You have missed the message. And you don't have a message that's going to be attractive to other people. You know? Okay. Preaching, shut up. Fourth common feature in recovery from addiction, he says, is the discovery or rediscovery of spirituality. Inspirational, altruistic group membership and faith in a power greater than me. Me seems important to recovery from addiction. He goes on, in varieties of religious experience, the book that is mentioned in the big book, got a whole series on that, that William James wrote. He says it first articulated the close relationship between religious conversion and recovery from intractable alcoholism. There is a link. There is a link. You know, the psychic change, the conversion experience goes to the heart of what we're looking for. That is step 12. That is our goal, that towards which we are going, and the steps are intended to be a vehicle to get us there. They're not to be worshiped and adored and memorized and all. They're to be worked. They're to be climbed. And I don't know if it's climbing up or climbing down. I suspect it's more climbing down into the depths of the ego and egotism that separates us, that comes in and contaminates this whole spiritual growth progress. He goes on, 3 decades later, Carl Jung gave to the founder of AA, Bill Wilson, the mantra, spiritus contra spiritum, meaning use spirituality, spirits against spirit, use spirituality as an antidote for addiction to alcoholic spirits. Let spirituality become the pathway to recovery. Valiant adds, multiple studies that in combination involve thousands of individuals suggest that good clinical outcomes are significantly correlated with frequency of AA attendance, with having a sponsor, with leading meetings, and with engaging in altruistic 12-step work, defined as reaching out to still suffering alcoholics. You know, I had an early experience of this lesson when I went to an AA meeting. I think I was a year sober or something like that, you know. And I came back to my sponsor. He said, how was that meeting? I said, it was a lousy meeting. I didn't get anything out of it. And he immediately said, oh, yeah? Well, what did you bring to it? And a little light went on. Very low wattage, but it did go on. that I'm not there to suck from. I do that. It's my nature. But I'm also there to give too. So I have to stop judging and start bringing. So this altruistic 12-step work, you know, if you want to grow in your spirituality, and this is true in the church, it's true in every religious tradition, you must give it away. It's not to sit on the mountaintop and experience nirvana. It is to take that little bit of nirvana that you experienced and bring it down to the poor suffering bastards in the valley who are dying for it, you know, and bring it to them and have compassion on them and bring some love to them. Otherwise, you're just keeping them stuck in their addiction. He quotes a study from Stanford University that, quote, alcoholics who received professional treatment and attended AA had almost twice the rate of abstinence of those who received professional treatment alone. Professional treatment is good. It's helpful. It can be insightful. I mean, I had a pretty fair amount of it over the years, and I benefited from it. Okay? It's helpful. But it's most helpful if it's done in conjunction with a spiritual fellowship, a laboratory, if you will, to work what you're learning there and help bring that to other people. It's like the hero's journey and becoming an elder in the program. An elder is there for the sake of others, you know, and that's a good place to come to, not just to be an old timer. We got a lot of old timers who are very crusty and pretty miserable people, you know. But the elders, they have some wisdom. And that's what the program needs. That's what the church needs, too. It doesn't have many, you know. You got to look hard and long to find some people. But they are there. They are there. And that's one of the beauties of the internet and YouTube. You know, you can find people who've got it, and they feed you. You know, they feed your soul with the information, and maybe more so the connection that we're longing for. All right. Comment we're talking about is a cult. You know, is it more like a religion? He has a paragraph or two saying that, you know, AA has really gone the extra mile in trying to see that it doesn't become that. And I think he's absolutely right, you know, but our leaders, you know, don't get into the guru trap. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Our groups are self-governing. Our program is one of attraction, not promotion. People are limited in how much they can even donate to the 12-step fellowship of their choice. It's natural for this contamination to happen in spiritual organizations. I don't know any group that has done more to protect itself from it than AA. You know, Wilson is credited, you know, with the 12 steps. But he said he got 2 through 11 straight out of the Oxford group. He tweaked the words a little bit. But the 12 traditions, those are his. And those are really his greater gift. How to protect the organization from its own destruction. You know? So study those traditions. They're important. And watch out for segments of the program where gurus have popped up and cult-like activities are going on, you know, where you don't have the program if you didn't study under my sponsor. And he was sponsored by so-and-so. And he was sponsored by so-and-so. And they trace their genealogy back to Jesus. it's repeating the pattern, you know? And I see people getting locked into regimented cult-like recovery, you know? Might be helpful in the beginning, but sooner or later, you need to break free from that. You know, I had some of that in my early days. I needed to break free from it, you know? It was good and helpful and powerful and strong in the beginning, but not after a while. Richard Rohr says something really nice. He says that kind of thing is a great way to start. It's a terrible way to end. I don't think I could say it any better than that. It can be a good way to start. Rigid, demanding, by the book. It's a terrible way to end, you know? And I don't think it's the way that the original program meant for us to end. But I used to wonder, you know, was I getting myself into a cult 51 years ago when I came in? He said, you know, read our books, come to our meetings, you know, get rid of those old friends, don't think, stay with this group, you know. And I was worried about that. And one day I mustered up the courage to go to my sponsor. And I said, you people, I'm really scared. I think you're trying to brainwash me. He's a pretty wise man. He thought about that for a second. He said, well, Bill, I think you're right. We are trying to brainwash you because you have a very dirty brain. And so you bring it to us. And each week we scrub a little of alcoholism and addiction out of it. We're washing your brain. I don't think George would say we've got a dirty brain. I know he says, we have a lizard brain. And what AA is maybe uniquely designed to do is to prevent relapse long enough for our brains to evolve further, to grow along spiritual lines. Okay. And that's where that limited conversion comes in. People who just stop their growth and stagnate, you know? And God, I used to work with young people coming into the program. And these would be young guys in their maybe 20s, early 30s. And it's the AA stuff. And they said, Jesus, I've had this since I was 15. Am I going to get this again? Is that what you're giving me again? Is it rote? Is it mechanical? And I always thought my job is to give them something different. Something that feeds them, you know? When they drank and drugged, they were looking for something. All right, they're looking in the wrong direction, but they're still looking for something. Can we give them that something? And that's the stuff that Valiant, I think, is getting at in his book. So, limited conversion bad, full conversion good. And that's what I'm still moving towards after 51 years. And I think because the program was presented to me in that way, it gave me a reason to stick around, because it's never ending. The potential for growth is never ending. That's the pathway you need to find, you know? And I think the steps, I haven't found a better way to lead one through that lizard brain to get to the other side. He closes his chapter, and I'll close this series with a nice quote from a religious historian, Karen Armstrong. She used to be a nun has written some really good books. She's on YouTube. You can find her, Karen Armstrong. Some good discussions on really what is religion and spirituality all about. She says, the one and only test of a valid religious idea, doctrinal statement, spiritual experience, or devotional practice is that it must lead directly to practical compassion. If your understanding of the divine makes you kinder, more empathetic, and impels you to express this sympathy in concrete acts of loving kindness, this is good theology. But if your notion of God or your spiritual practice makes you unkind, belligerent, cruel, or self-righteous, or if it leads you to kill in God's name, it's bad theology. Compassion was the litmus test for the prophets of Israel, for the rabbis of the Talmud, for Jesus, for Paul, and for Muhammad, not to mention Confucius, Lao Tzu, and the Buddha. unquote. And it's the goal of the 12-step journey. Compassion towards others, and I would add compassion towards ourselves. That's a really good test for us as well. So let me close this series with an important line that kind of summed it up from the big book. It says, we are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And that's what Valiant has illuminated, I think, in his book. What is the spiritual condition? And he would say it's one that has evolved, and it has evolved and can be seen if there is the presence of positive spiritual emotions. What? Love, hope, faith, joy, forgiveness, compassion, awe, and mystical illumination. You want to know your spiritual condition? See where you are with those emotions in your life. Take your inventory. Do it daily, all right? And then pray for greater love, greater joy, greater forgiveness, greater compassion, and use two-way prayer very specifically to ask the inner voice, the inner guide, to show you, to direct you towards those things. Two-way prayer brought my program to life. It was getting crusty and rusty. I was 20 years sober and getting dry as a bone. You know, I wasn't leaving the program, but I wasn't being fed by it the way I needed to be. Opened that door and hasn't stopped giving for 31 years. So anyway, I hope this series has been helpful. I hope you're using two-way prayer to bring you closer to a genuine realization of these emotions in your life. And if this series was helpful, do whatever you're supposed to do on these modern gizmos. Hit the like button, subscribe. I hope to get this out to as many people in 12-step recovery who might benefit from it. So if you're benefiting, try to pass it on to others. And I thank you for listening.